Chapter 1. Understanding Cancer. There is no type of cancer from which some people have not recovered. The road to recovery generally is not very easy and requires real determination. Currently, the statistics show that 66% of all serious cancers can be cured. The one item that you rationalize as a bother or does not apply to you can be the deciding factor that would tilt the scale in your favor or against you. You generally have one chance. Use every resource in your power. Cancer is a unique disease. There are five factors that make it different from any other known illness. First, cancer cells grow geometrically without limitation. That means 2 becomes 4, then 8, 16, 32, 64, etc. If they grew 1, then 2, 3, 4, 5, we probably would have never heard of it. Because of this geometric growth, we must treat it promptly and properly, or it can soon grow to a point where it may be untreatable. If we break our arm and it is not set properly, we can have it reset again whenever we want. It is not irreversible and terminal. To further illustrate the way cancer grows, picture algae covering a lake. This algae doubles in area each day until, after 1 month's time, it completely covers the lake. When should it be noticed? When it covers one half of the lake, that is the day before the end of the month. When it only covers one fourth of the lake, that is 2 days before the end of the month. If you caught yours 3 or 4 or 5 days before the end of the month, you must feel very grateful. The second unique factor is the property of cancer cells to spontaneously travel to distant sites. 1 million cancer cells are smaller than the head of a pin. 1 billion cancer cells are the size of a pea. This means that they have the ability to float freely through the bloodstream or the lymph system. They could be in your stomach today, and in your head, your lungs, or your toes tomorrow. If you break your arm, it cannot metastasize, spread, to your hip. Third is that cancer is actually over 200 different diseases. There is no similarity between brain cancer and breast cancer, other than the word cancer and the fact that they are both rapidly dividing cells. Different types of cancer should be treated by different types of medical specialists with totally different methods after being diagnosed through different means. Furthermore, the advances being made continuously in the many different types of treatments make it absolutely impossible for any one individual to know the very latest and best therapy for every type of cancer. In contrast, if you break your arm, many physicians would know the state-of-the-art way to set it. Fourth is the unique fact that while many cancers can be treated successfully the first time, if they are not, often there is no second chance. For example, with my lung cancer, I had all the radiation my lung could take, so if I had not been cured completely and had suffered a recurrence, I could not again have successfully had radiation therapy. I had my limit on adriamycin, a particularly effective cancer drug, but one which can do harm if given in excess of certain amounts, so it would not have been available to me if needed a second time. After you have one lung removed, there is no point in talking about surgery because you cannot live without both lungs. These are just examples in my case, but the same principles apply in many cases. This is why we not only preach prompt and proper treatment, but also thorough treatment, so you know you have the best chance of being through with it forever. If you break your arm a second time, generally it is not more critical than the first time. Fifth and last is the major factor mental attitude plays in the recovery from cancer. Most oncologists agree that if a patient believes they will die from their cancer, they are right and cannot be saved. That is not to state that if they believe they will recover, they necessarily will. But at least they have a chance. If you break your arm, whether you think it will mend or does not matter, it generally will heal in so many days. Some people feel that because they don't have sufficient funds, they won't receive the best treatments. In fact, these people are defeatists. They are making up their minds in advance that they are going to take the easy road out and give in to their disease. I have never seen the individual who, even though absolutely destitute, could not get the proper treatments if they applied themselves and really tried. There are resources in every major community. Remember, no one owes you anything. You have to work to get it like everything else in life. It can be done. An example of some of the resources that could be investigated are VA hospitals, state cancer hospitals, university hospitals, or teaching institutions. and county or city hospitals. Treatment for patients participating in National Cancer Institute clinical research protocols at the Clinical Center of the National Institute of Health is provided free of charge. Generally, a local qualified physician can give you suggestions on where to look. Some people have said I recovered because of my financial position and that I must have gotten preferential treatment. I would like to dispel this myth. First of all, I am unaware that cancer shows partiality because of financial or any other position. I believe rich or poor people have an equal chance of surviving. I also believe that tall or short people have a relatively equal chance as well as fat and thin or black or white people. As to receiving preferential treatment, that was hardly the case. At home, where I was known and possibly could have gotten superior attention, I was told it was hopeless and to get my estate in order. If that is superior treatment, I don't need it. When I went 900 miles away to a mammoth institution where I was a number, I did receive superb service and attention, not because of who I was, but because that is the way they do things. My doctor, before giving me any treatments, gave me his home telephone number. He said in the next 2 years of treatments, I would want to contact him many times in the middle of the night or over the weekend. Of course, I could reach him during weekdays at the clinic. However, he did not want me to waste my energy during a sleepless night or weekend about anything that would be bothering me. He wanted me to apply all my energy to getting well. For that reason, he gave me his home telephone number and told me to call him anytime anything bothered me. He did this for his other patients also, as should all good doctors. This discussion of my doctor is only for the purpose of showing you where I got my support, ideas, and knowledge, and what you should look for and have a right to expect from your physician. My doctor was the greatest. Not only did he cure me from cancer, but he taught me so much along the way. In the very first telephone conversation, he started, without my knowing it, by getting my undivided attention and ascertaining my dedication. I was diagnosed on a Wednesday with terminal stage 3 squamous cell lung cancer. I talked with him Wednesday night long distance, and he wanted me to fly there Thursday so I could be examined and tested Friday. The clinic is closed on Saturday and Sunday. Because I was terminal and might never have seen my home or office again, I wanted to have 4 days to get my estate in order at the expense of 1 day of testing. I wanted to fly down Sunday to be examined and tested on Monday, 1 working day later. My doctor said if I did not fly down on Thursday, he would not treat me. At the time, I may have thought he was being inconsiderate. Since then, that one little remark has taught me many things. First of all, cancer is never as treatable as it is right now. At some time in the future, it is probably not treatable. Whether that time is tomorrow, next week, or next month depends on the individual case. This afternoon or first thing tomorrow morning is the best time to start trying to beat it. Possibly even more important than that, I soon came to realize he wanted to be certain that recovering from cancer had my full attention. He wanted to be certain that I would make the commitment to whatever was necessary to get well. There is no doubt that generally it is a long, hard road with plenty of obstructions and detours. He wanted to be sure that I wasn't going to say, "Okay, doc, I'll do anything you tell me to do as long as it is convenient with me." He wanted to know that getting well came first before anything and everything else in my life. And possibly the most important thing I learned from those few words was a third factor. He wanted to know that I had the dedication and drive to do what would be required to be victorious over cancer. That day may not have been critical, but that day represented just one of the many negative options that would lie in the path of my recovery that I would have to forego if I were going to succeed. He knew my chances of recovery were much greater if I had a truly strong, burning desire to live. This was his way of testing me. This was his way of proving it. If I would give up 4 days I wanted so desperately to give him his 1 day he asked for, my dedication to success was guaranteed. The biggest and the hardest single thing that you will be required to do in the entire battle is to make up your mind to really fight it. You must, on your own, make the commitment that you will do everything in your power to fight your disease. No exceptions, nothing halfway, nothing for the sake of ease or convenience. Everything, nothing short of it. When you have done this, you have accomplished the most difficult thing you will have to accomplish throughout your entire treatment. This applies no matter how serious or how minor you are led to believe your cancer is. If it is minor, great. Your commitment should not be difficult to abide by. If you are told you are going to die in 3 months or 3 years or whatever, then your commitment is that much more vital. There are a lot of terminal people alive, healthy, and cancer-free. There is no type of cancer from which some people have not been cured. There is no cancer for which there is no treatment. To give up requires no commitment. You can stay in the comfort of your own lifestyle. Fighting means a complete change of lifestyle, absolutely leaving your comfort zone. There will be doctors doing things you might not like. There will be lots of work for you to do. There might even be some pain and suffering, and certainly lots of new and unexpected experiences. You must decide that the end is worth the means because you are the only one who can do it. No one else can do it for you. There is no halfway. It's all the way. But when it is all said and done, no matter what the results are, I've never met anyone who felt that it was not the best way. Go for it with no second thoughts or regrets. Remember, once you have made the commitment, everything else is relatively easy. There will be pleasant experiences. There will be unpleasant experiences. But I can promise you, it is not as difficult as making the decision to make the commitment. Fighting cancer is not a simple matter of thinking positively, wishing it away and saying, "Hey doc, cure me." It is a matter of knowledge. It is a matter of educating yourself about every detail and mustering all your resources. Use every drop of energy in an organized fashion to constructively concentrate on getting rid of cancer. Most cancers can be successfully treated, but generally you have only one chance. If you miss that first chance, if you don't do everything in your power, often there is no second chance. This is why no cancer patient can afford the luxury of looking back and saying, "I wish I would have." Never look back. Concentrate on this moment forward and do everything in your power. There is no downside risk. Now you have a chance. When I talk to a cancer patient who is still smoking, including but not limited to lung or throat cancer, the answer as to why that person continues to smoke is obvious without asking the question. Way down deep, this person knows that smoking is bad for them. No one has to explain. No one has to plead with them to give it up. What this person is screaming to me is that they only want to live as long as it is easy and convenient for them. They are not willing to do anything and everything to help their doctor cure them. They know they must do everything in their power if they want to have a chance of getting well. By continuing to smoke, they are saying that they are not willing to do everything in their power to be cured, and therefore their chances are dramatically reduced. Maybe that is their privilege, but they should not ask others to do everything possible if they are not willing to help themselves. I talked with a 42-year-old lady paralyzed from the waist down with cancer from an undetermined origin. She had been told she would never walk again. Asked if she smoked, she replied that she knew it was bad for her and had been meaning to give it up long before she got cancer. As soon as she could get up on crutches and walk, she was going to go to a hypnotist to quit. This told me that if she didn't change her attitude, she would defeat herself. She obviously loved smoking and was dependent on it. She had promised to quit as soon as she could walk. She might have subconsciously procrastinated in her attempt to walk in order to delay, as long as possible, her quitting smoking. Annette called my doctor out of the hospital room one morning to ask him a question about me. He marched her right back and gave her quite a tongue lashing in front of me. He told her never to ask him a question about me except in front of my face. There could be no secrets from a cancer patient if there was any hope the patient could get well. That single event probably did more constructive good for my mental attitude than any other factor. Just to realize that I was told everything honestly about my condition removed all doubts. One day in the clinic, we asked my doctor if a friend of ours, whom he was treating, would make it. His reply startled us. He said we could talk to him and look into his eyes and know as well as he did whether this person would recover. We tried it. This person's posture was terribly bent over. His walk was a shuffle, like someone 40 years older. His yellowish, sagging skin and head and face without a hair made him look like death warmed over. Yet, the accent and genuine determination in his voice and glint in his eyes made us believe he was going to make it. And this was in spite of the fact that 85% of his liver had been replaced by cancer. And you know what? For several months thereafter, we got reports on how his tumor shrank and his liver regenerated itself. Truly a miracle. The opposite had also been true. I talked with two volunteers at the Block Cancer Hotline training program. Both of these women had experienced breast cancer. They had been treated by fine oncologists and had been told they were cured. One of them felt very depressed whenever she talked to anyone with cancer, and the other could not stand to even mention cancer. I came home and told my wife that I did not believe either of these people were through with their cancer in spite of what they had been told by their physicians. Today, one of those two is gallantly fighting against recurrent breast cancer, and the other has passed away. I wish there were an easy way to specifically list the points to take into account to render an accurate psychological prognosis. As each case of cancer is as unique as a fingerprint, so is each person's desire and determination. To camouflage it as positive attitude is oversimplification. In a visit to Pittsburgh for a press conference on the opening of a new cancer hotline, I was picked up at the airport by a woman with an extremely positive attitude. She knew she was going to make it. She was in her fourth recurrence of breast cancer. She had the finest oncologist, in her words, in Allegheny County. I asked her what her prognosis was. She told me she had never asked him because she did not want to hear what he would say. She knew she would beat it. What did this tell me? She had a qualified oncologist in whom she had complete confidence. She was afraid to ask him about her future, believing he doubted she could ever recover. Therefore, down deep, she believed she would not make it. Sure enough, a few months later, she passed away. Failure to become intimately involved with all the details of your cancer is like closing your eyes after falling into quicksand. For the moment, maybe, your ignorance will give you a false sense of security. However, to have a chance of escaping, you must muster all your resources and use and exhaust every option open to you. Hamilton Jordan, White House Chief of Staff under President Jimmy Carter, upon being diagnosed with cancer at the age of 41, stated, "One of my closest friends is a doctor, and he came to see me one day and said, 'You're going to have to manage your own damn medical care.' That shocked me. It put a sense of burden and responsibility on me that I wasn't sure I could exercise properly. But as I saw things unfold, I saw he was right. Although it was tempting to stay at the hospital and be among all my friends, and the hospital doctors thought they could do as good a job as anybody, I realized there were many choices to be made, and I had to make them for myself." One of the major problems is that the initial diagnosis, while traumatic and beyond comprehension, is often relatively innocuous. It is often discovered through routine physical examination, surgery for another situation, or a question about some minor symptom. Some people feel that maybe it isn't as bad as it is cracked up to be, and maybe, if they do nothing, it will just fade away. These individuals are looking in exactly the wrong direction. They should be grateful that their cancer was discovered at such an early stage and then promptly do everything in their power to successfully treat it. The initial diagnosis of cancer makes many feel they have totally lost control. It is vital to get some part of this control back. The patient and the entire family faces a multitude of decisions. It is helpful to the patient and the family if the strategy is openly discussed and defined so that all members understand it. Also, the more information you have, the more power you can have to deal with the situation. By gaining knowledge, you can get back some of your control. This is your life, and you are entitled to make your own decisions, but only if you have adequate information to make good decisions. These are all human judgments because no one has a God-given power to make them. Information will help you feel some personal control and security during treatment. The peace of mind gained by knowledge is an important factor in healing. There are many sources for this information. Make a list of what you would like to know to ask your doctor the next time you talk to him. He is usually more than willing to explain anything you want to know. Look up your disease and the treatments in the public library or on your computer. I recommend the National Cancer Institute, NCI, at www.cancer.gov or the Block Cancer Foundation at www.blockcancer.org. Call 800-4-CANCER, U.S. Government Cancer Information Service. The Block Cancer Hotline at 800-433-0464. The American Cancer Society, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, or other appropriate support groups. They generally have a great deal of information available that they will be happy to send to you and answer your questions. It often proves helpful to talk to someone who has had the same problem. This can be arranged through your doctor, a support group, or by calling the Block Cancer Hotline. At a meeting of the psychiatrists and psychologists who donated their services at the RA Block Cancer Management Center, a discussion was had of the priority of the various goals they tried to accomplish. It was determined that one objective stood out above all others, that of ascertaining the patient's support mechanism, whether it be family, friends, neighbors, paid people such as a companion, nurse, or doctor. The most important single controllable factor in your recovery is to establish a good support organization. Stress and depression are integral parts of this disease. The sooner we realize that, the better and easier they are to cope with. We must have outlets to vent our emotions and support us in times of need. No matter how strong we each think we are, without a good support mechanism, we will crumble. At the initial trauma of being diagnosed, a person will mistakenly feel that they do not want to burden their loved ones with the depressing aspects of the disease. They will feel that they do not want to bore or inflict their discomfort on their friends and neighbors. Nothing could be further from reality. Your family who love you want to show their love by having you share your feelings with them. Your friends want to express their support by understanding your problems and trying to help you with them. You are not imposing on them by opening up. You are allowing them to do what they deeply and sincerely want to do by sharing your emotions and feelings with them. If you shut them out of your life, you are not doing them or yourself any favor. It may be hard to believe at first, but it makes no difference how old or how young they are, or how strong or how infirm they are. Everyone you know wants honestly to help you and is capable in some degree to help you. You are hurting them by saying you don't want them to. Allow them in. Make them feel wanted. Let them share and do their thing. It is one of those situations where everyone wins. Everyone is better off. In Neil Simon's Brighton Beach memoirs, Eugene, 14, mentions Aunt Blanche. "You see, her husband, Uncle Dan, died 6 years ago from this thing. They never say the word. They always whisper it. It was cancer." I think they are afraid if they said it out loud. God would say, "I heard that. You said the dread disease. Just for that, I smite you down with it." There are some things that grown-ups just won't discuss. For many cancer patients, the reticence and awkwardness of acquaintances is an additional burden. When talking about your problem with anyone, always include a statement to the effect, "With the help of my wonderful doctors, family, and friends, we are going to do everything in our power to beat this disease." It would not be wrong to state when appropriate, "Even though the statistics for my problem are not terrible, I am not a statistic. I am going to do everything possible to be one of those who survive this." Make a written list of your support mechanism. In addition to family, friends, neighbors, companions, office co-workers, tradespeople, and professionals, don't forget to include volunteers and organize support groups. Many are organized for the prime purpose of helping you. Help them by allowing them to help you. On your list, next to the name of each member of your support team, write a date on which you will contact them if you have not heard from them. When you make contact, cross this date off and put the next date to contact down. By doing this, you will be helping them and yourself. Rabbi Herschel Jaffe, in his book, Why Me? Why Anyone? States, I feel more in command of things. Strangely, somehow I feel more alive. By facing death, I am learning how to live. I've learned you shouldn't feel cursed if you have a disease with a foul name. Don't think of yourself as worthless because you've been stricken. Tell the people you love how you feel about them while you still have the chance. Be kind to yourself. We should be thankful for each day granted to us and treat it joyously. Every moment is special to me. Cancer is often an eye-opener, teaching us that life is too short to postpone what we really want. It starts us thinking about how much we really enjoy life. In that respect, it can really be a positive experience because those who have cancer can use it in positive ways. To grow and to change their ways for the better and to profoundly affect the lives of loved ones around them in deeply positive ways.